It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
Hey there, welcome to Firearm Friday. I am Chris Dover, and today we've got Big Tony in the house, Tony Simon, the purveyor of the Diversity Shoot and host of the 2A4E podcast. But first, let's talk about a place that you can get some really cool swag, and that is over on gearwebsites.com. Jump on over there. Got all kinds of cool things from the Old West Gun playing card decks to the new Firearm Inventor series decks, as well as patches, stickers, and all kinds of cool firearm-related swag. Again, that's gearwebsites.com. All right, Drew, we are back, and we have Tony on the line. Tony is the host of the 2A4E podcast, among various other projects. How are you, Tony?
I'm doing well, man, doing well. Exhausted. Recorded last night. We finished up about midnight. Woke up 4 o'clock this morning to go to work. Everybody wants to be a rock star until it's time to do rock star stuff.
Man, I'm telling you, the life of a YouTuber or whatever, right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Between the travel and the late nights and the scheduling and everything else, it's insane. You know, since it's kind of fresh in history, I guess, how was NRA for you guys?
NRA was a lot of fun. Man, time flies. I didn't have a solid plan. I wish I did, because I could have hit more, vendors. And it was like, okay, I'm going to hit Grey Ghost. I'm going to hit Faxon. I'm going to hit Timber Creek. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered Proper, and it just burned up time. You know what I mean? I'm like, dang. And I got a few interviews, LWRC. I got to see them, but it was just so quick. It seems those, mm-hmm. 3 days? Friday, yeah. Saturday, and Sunday just go so quickly.
Yeah, I said it last year, I've said it this year, it seems like every year with NRA, I'm like, man, it needs to be the same length as SHOT Show.
You know? I got lucky. I got interviewed by Cam.
Nice, very nice.
It was cool, NRA TV. I got interviewed by USA Shooting, by John, the son. I can't think of the dad and the son do the USA Shooting on one of the gun channels I used to grow up watching. Mm-hmm. And I got a quick 3-minute interview with him. I thought that was awesome. And I met a lot of friends, even guys like you who we talked online we for months.
Right.
And we finally got to see each other in person. That was a lot of fun. So, yeah, I enjoyed NRA. Indy is a really cool city to set up for something like that convention, because everything was within walking distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I appreciated that. Georgia was not like that. And yeah. Louisville definitely wasn't like that.
Yeah, I think, what did somebody say, 2022 maybe? It's back in Louisville, 2022, somebody was saying. 2020 is... Nashville, yeah, 2021 is Houston, which is great. I live in Texas, so nothing's close, but Houston's way closer than Indy, so.
Hopefully I'm flying by then.
Right. You gotta grow those wings first, though, Tony, before you can. it's good to hear that you were able to get stuff done. Now, did you have a list, any type of a list or a plan going in at all?
It was just in my head to hit people, and I didn't get everyone I wanted.
Right.
And it's like I decided after doing this for a few years and trying to just hit every booth, for you, it's like you can't hit every booth.
Oh, no, there's no way.
There's no way. So what I try to do is hit the booths that I have a relationship with, or hit the booths that have products out. And I'm talking about for sponsorship, for the second is for everyone. That, mm-hmm. That's the booths I go to. And also, I'm starting to do video recording for the YouTube channel, because I want to put out something other than our podcast on Simon Says Train, mm-hmm. our YouTube channel.
Right.
And man, you could see the first day when I started recording with my cell phone, you could see the difference between that and the last day.
Sure.
Like, I think maybe three videos look good. And I'm like, you can't get better at something if you don't do it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did.
Right.
Well,
if it makes
it's
you,
just
if
new
it makes
content.
You, if it makes you feel any better, I did go in with a plan and a list.
Mm-hmm. And, how'd that work out?
And it still didn't work out. So, you know, it really doesn't matter because, yeah, and you know how it is. You know, you go in there and, okay, I got to hit these booths and do this and do that, and I got to hit these booths and do that. And then the next thing you know, especially after the first day or even during mm-hmm. the first day, you run into this person or you run into that person, and it's like, oh, swing by and see me. Swing by and see me. Come by and do this. You know, and then by the time you work all of those in, and some of those leads are really promising. You don't want to, you know, for your projects or whatever you got going, and you know you don't want to dismiss them. You certainly want to get by there and take care of that, and then so you end up dropping, you know, because my list is always prioritized. It's kind of like you say, I have a relationship with these people. I've got to at least stop by, shake hands, say hey, that sort of thing. I've got to. And then from there, it's like, okay, these people, I kind of want to, you know, start a relationship. I've kind of got a relationship. I want to cultivate that a little more. I need to try to see these. And, you know, then there's the it goes on down the list to the ones that, okay, haven't met these people, haven't dealt with these people, but I really want to get by there, see the products, and see if there's, you know, something maybe with the project or whatever we can work on. And inevitably, at least half, and it doesn't matter whether it's shot, NRA, whatever it is, that last category, the ones that I just kind of want to start a relationship with and experience their products and that sort of stuff, inevitably at least half of that list, it gets blown away. I mean, there's no way you can get to that by the end of the time frame for these shows. And it's just the way that they roll. I've just accepted that. And the people that have done it a long time, they'll tell you, like G-Webs and a lot of the other ones, they'll tell you, plan, make those lists, you know, do whatever you feel you need to do. But once you get to these shows and you get in there, be fluid. be ready to bob and weave and be fluid, because you're just going to have to. It's the way it works.
It's hilarious because it's almost like a thing now that I have a relationship with High Point. Mm-hmm. I really think they're just a nice group of people. So I go over there, and I'm like, all right, I'll hit High Point, say hello. Well, whoa, they have that new High Point prototype pistol they've been showing at SHOT Show.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, so I'm like, well, okay, let me maybe get some pictures of it, because they keep it under glass. It's a prototype. It's a, what do you call that? Not a CAD. 3D printed, so it's not that tough.
Right.
And I was like, all right, I'll get some pictures, I'll post it up, internet will go crazy. Well, because I've worked with him since 2015, mm-hmm. they were like, want to check it out? Took the glass off, and now I have this pistol in my hand.
There you go.
I'm like, okay, even better, take the photos, talk to him, get the breakdown. And I hadn't clicked in my head because, again, a relationship. I'm talking to someone who I'm friendly with. It didn't click with me. Yo, he's giving me a perfect, like, concise elevator 30-second video that I could knock this out in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I just forgot to do it. Yeah. But, it's stuff like that. Yeah, be fluid. All right, missed opportunity, but so what? I have the information, and I can talk about it on the podcast.
Sure.
Keep it moving.
Right. Right.
And just nice people, dude. I mean, even that press room we were in, mm-hmm. the people flowing in and out was like, holy mackerel, I know that. That's Mas Ayoub.
Right.
That's.
Yeah.
I've read your stuff, dude. I've read your stuff.
And you haven't, have you made SHOT Show yet? You haven't made SHOT Show yet, right?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man. If you think the press room or whatever in NRA is nice and all of that, I mean, wait till you get to SHOT Show. I mean, first of all, fanboying out is very hard not to do in the press room at SHOT Show. And I'm not talking about big YouTubers or something like that, but a lot of these mm-hmm. guys that you know are there for media or press or whatever, but you know, are the legit people. very interesting, especially some of these longtime riders and things like that. And then the treatments you get as far as the food that's out there and the refreshments. I mean, NRA ain't got nothing on SHOT Show, brother. It's amazing.
You mean them dried out pretzel balls we had? That's
right. They were good when they were warm. They were good. My hang up on the pretzel things were there wasn't any nacho cheese out there, man. I'm a big proponent of the nacho cheese with the pretzels, and they had some kind of mustard dip, and I'm like, what is this nonsense? You know?
Yeah, right. Oh well, see, I like the mustard dip. My wife likes the nacho cheese. I'm sitting there and I go, okay, cool, they have these. Well, let me set my bags down, and then you just start running into people. Mm-hmm. By the time I get over there, look, the press had wiped that stuff out, man. There was salt in the bottom of it, and that was it.
right. But I mean, that's I don't know. That's part of it, and I don't know. There's with NRA, it's weird. With NRA, there's good years as far as the press room, you know, and we kind of wondered that. You know, I had asked that question multiple times in the conversations leading up to NRAM this year. It's like, I wonder what the press room's going to be like, you know, because I like a larger room laid out well, has some good corners in it to where if you need to shoot some stuff or record some stuff or do any kind of content, you've got some kind of off the beaten path there, and then ample snacks and drinks and stuff like that. And the drinks were even few and far between. They had the big things of water and tea or whatever and juice there. But as far as canned drinks or something like that, something that was a little easier to walk around with and not have to worry about spilling stuff, because that whole place, if I recall, the whole place was carpeted. You didn't have to worry about spilling drinks or God forbid spilling something on somebody as much. But I enjoyed the way the hallways were set up, and I found that the hallways there, especially down where the media was at, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of traffic on those hallways, a whole lot of public traffic through those hallways. And those provided pretty good lighting, pretty good backdrop with the indie, 19 whatever things on the wall, and pretty good acoustics for audio. So I found myself doing more recording in the hallways than I actually did utilizing the media room.
Oh yeah, and the fact that the media room was almost directly across from the show floor,
and the bathroom.
You just shoot across the hall and the bathroom. But yeah, you can shoot right across. Boom. You're into the show. I mean,
right.
And then you just gotta pull out your map and try to orient yourself. But by day three, you could.
I mean, once you get used to the layout, whether it's NRA or SHOT Show, the floor layout, the way the lanes and everything's broken up, it's the same. Just a matter of getting used to. Just a matter of getting used to that, and I don't know what to try to relate that to or liken it to for the listeners or whoever out there that don't get what I'm saying. But it's kind of like one of them things if you've been to some place maybe a racetrack or something like that. I mean, once you get used to the layout of, let's say, a racetrack, if you're maybe you do dirt bikes or, you know, off-road or something like that. It's like all racetracks have things that are similar, right? They have the straights and the curves and the things like that. And so once you kind of get that concept down of the concept down of the showroom floor, it makes it a little easier to navigate. And especially if you work a list like I do, that's not a concrete thing. We've already talked about that. But I walked from one end to the other multiple times, you know, because I had to because of some type of contact that was made. But if you have that list, at least at some point and at periods and pockets throughout the event, at least you can kind of work those booths in some type of chronological order, and that helps too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, and the food. Got to check out a bunch of food in Indy, hit a steakhouse. Mm-hmm. One of those steakhouses that everything is separate. Like, you buy the steak, And then you buy, you got to pick out the vegetable. And I'm like, dude, this is like a $100 meal for a steak and potato, man. And I drink water.
We didn't eat that fancy, man. We come in Thursday night, hit up the Cracker Barrel on the way in. Friday night, we ordered in Pizza Hut, believe it or not. We were so tired and everything. And here at home, I got the Pizza Hut rewards and all that stuff. We get pizza pretty regular here. And so I had some points build up, and some, you know, some free pizza and some stuff like that. I was like, heck, let's just use that, get it delivered. You know, that'll offset the cost of, because we don't deliver. We have to do carry out here. We live so far away from the place. But I was like, okay, well, we got the free pizza, so we'll use the rewards and use the rest of that to tip the driver and all that kind of stuff. Ended up, they were really busy. Friday night, ordering pizza. Go figure, right?
Yeah, imagine that.
But they were really busy, and so they gave us a free pizza when they showed up, which was nice. So I was like, wow, we technically only had to pay for, we got four pizzas and only had to pay for one, technically. So I was like, that's nice. That's cool. And then, of course, Saturday night, we did the cookout with the hamburgers there at the house, which was awesome, you know. And it ended up actually being able to bring some of those. We take a cooler pretty much everywhere we go, so we put those dudes in the cooler. The stuff that was left over, I forgot, but the gun snob too, it was out there. He brought 20 or 25 pounds or something like that of fresh, because they raise cattle, you know, hamburger meat. So there was some left over, and was able to take that home, actually, and eat on that for the next few days, which was nice. So we definitely didn't go hungry, but we didn't pull the big dog move of going to the expensive steakhouse, that's for sure.
Oh, I got invited to the big steakhouse.
Oh, okay, okay, we'll go with that.
Believe me. And I was like, all right, you know, I'm thinking Outback, you know what I mean, for steakhouse. Okay, I'll spend like $30. We get there and nothing. I think your appetizer's $30.
Wow.
So I hit my wife up. I'm like, yo, what am I supposed to do? You know, I'm hanging out with some friends from Jersey, Modern Material Rifles. He's pretty much the only or one of the few AR manufacturers in this entire state of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Friend of mine, and another friend, Rocco, he runs a training company. And he's like, hey, let's go out. So here we are in Indy, Tony, Rocco, and Joe from Jersey at a steakhouse.
Right.
It was like, wow, this sounds like a mafia meetup. What's the name of the steakhouse? Tony's.
Tony's. Wow. Nice.
Tony's.
Nice.
And, you know, the bill comes in. And, yo, Rocco snatches the sucker up and says, I got this, fellas.
Nice. That'll work.
I was like, well, la-di-da. So he took care of the whole thing.
Right.
Nailed the tip, everything. We were like, wow, that's pretty cool. So,
yeah.
Hey, that's a friend of yours, you know. He said, I don't do this a lot. I go out. This is a fancy restaurant. I wanted to see what it was like.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, me too. Me
and
too.
And, you know, that happens. I had a... didn't at Indy and didn't you know, at SHOT Show, but actually last year at SHOT Show, one of the nights I had, didn't get the $100 steak dinner like you did, but I did have a ammunition manufacturer that I've worked with in the past take me to a pretty nice barbecue joint one night. So and sadly that was a meetup night for a lot of the Gun Channels folks. They were going to go over to the Boulder Buffet. That's one of the big places when we do SHOT Show. Is you can go there. It's a big, huge buffet. Everybody can get what they want to eat there, fairly reasonably priced. Mm-hmm. And they all did that, and I was like, you know, I was torn. And, you know, talking with Ghost, talking with G-Webs, and they're like, hey, you can't turn down, you know, an invite to by the industry people to go eat. You know, go do it. We can hang out whenever, you know. But part of me wanted to hang out, because that's one of the cool things with, you know, you mentioned it earlier, we're getting to see the different people at the event, and that's one of the cool things. I mean, we talk like this all the time, but, you know, it's very rare that we cross paths in real life, you know, most of us. So when we have that opportunity, we want to seize that, because it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, because you fly halfway across the country or drive most of the way, everybody's there. You always talk online, and then the industry guys are like, "Hey, want to go out with us?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm not turning down dinner with HK."
Right. Yeah, not happening.
Yeah, I'm like, that might affect my future FFL trips, as in I won't have any.
Right.
But I had fun. I really appreciate it, and I'm grateful. I had people who recognized me from the various podcasts I'm on. They came out and, you know, said hello. Mm-hmm. And, man, is that weirdly humbling
to have people. I agree. Yeah.
What? They're like, yeah, I really enjoy the work you do, and thank you for the Second Amendment advocacy stuff that you do. And I'm like, I really appreciate it because, you know, a lot of stuff we do is at home in front of our computers, putting things together.
Right.
And my diversity shoots every other month at Gun for Hire Range. So it's not like I'm there all the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, when people come up and say they appreciate what we do, it's amazing and humbling, and I'm thankful for every one of them.
Right. And it's even weirder. It's one thing when you meet up with people that you see online, right? You see in your comments, you see in the chats, you know, they're not other creators, but you know they're followers or viewers or listeners or whatever. And then there's a difference between that and then just that random person that doesn't participate in the chats and doesn't comment, and they come up to you and they're like, "Oh, follow all your stuff and your video on this," and I'm like, "What's your handle?" And they're like, "Oh no, I don't comment and do all that stuff." And I always take the opportunity with that to say, "You should. That's what it's about. We want engagement. Yeah. We want that back and forth. Get in there. Let's mix it up. I expect to see you next chat. You know, I expect to see some comments and some chat out there from you. It's like, come on." You know,
it is. I had a Canadian come up to me and go, "I really like the stuff you do. I'm from Canada and I'm this and I'm that." And I'm like, "Well, thank you. What's your name?" Mm-hmm. And I mentioned him, you know, as I was talking about the people I met. Mm-hmm. He sent me an email, man, thanking me for mentioning him on a show.
Nice.
I just thought, really? I thought that was real cool, man.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. So I want to shift gears here a little bit, Tony, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And let you talk a little bit about yourself and where you came from and how you got to sort of where you are today.
Okay. I'll make it the short version. I was born and raised in the South. I'm from Southwest Virginia. Grew up there whole life, farming community, tobacco farm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I never hunted growing up, mainly because my cousins and friends did, and they were all stupid and dangerous. So I didn't go out with them.
Sounds like a bunch of rednecks, don't it? Almost.
Yeah, right. There's not much difference between us, especially where we grew up.
Right.
I mean, you know, we all grew up on a farm, regardless of what color you were, and we're entertained by the same things. And of course, this is in the 70s and the 80s. Mm-hmm. We had no cable. You only had three television stations, and it went off at midnight.
Or when the president was on.
When the president was on and everything was ruined.
Right.
Kids today don't know the pain of realizing TV for the night was ruined whenever the president was on.
Now they could just change the channel. It's like, no, that didn't happen back then.
I'm on my phone. I don't care what the president said. But that's where I came from. High school, I was on the junior ROTC rifle team.
Nice.
So I started competitively shooting in high school, 10-meter air rifle. That was my thing. Joined the Corps in the Marine Corps. Didn't do much shooting because I was stationed for almost half my career in Japan, so that was out. I was stationed at Iwakuni, which is an air base on mainland. So we had no rifle range. We had no access to a rifle range. I got back to North Carolina, and I was really always into guns since I was a kid, like four. Mm-hmm. But I didn't exercise my Second Amendment right while I was in the Corps because I really didn't dig that I would have to give my gun up to the armory because I lived on base.
Right.
So my gun would have to be parked there, and then I'd have to get my gun out to take it to the range and then bring it back and put it in the armory. And all I heard from guys were stories about how the armory dudes would take your guns out and shoot the snot out of them and put them back up.
Sure.
And I was like, you know what? No. Got out in 93. got out in 93, moved to Jersey, and at that time, I think the minute I got out, I purchased a 1911, and a Mosin Nagant, and an infield, American infield, M1917 at 30-06. I was always, you know, they had a story to tell.
Sure.
Surplus firearms really had a story to tell, and I loved it. I didn't pay attention to the whole, 1993 Assault Weapons Act or 94 Assault Weapons Act, because it didn't have anything to do with me. I was 20. In my mind, it had nothing to do with me. I was 22, chasing girls, shooting surplus guns. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, understandable. Yeah, we're right there in the same age, I think, kind of.
Yeah, so, you know, I paid no attention to the legislation. When I moved to Jersey, I made phone calls, because that's what you had to do to get information, to every state police between Virginia and Jersey. Mm-hmm. And the closer I got to Jersey, the more ridiculous the gun laws became, until they told me if I came into the state with my pistol, it would have to be unloaded, locked in the trunk, ammo would have to be in a separate box. And I started laughing, because I thought the woman was joking. I'm from Virginia, where I could have it on my passenger seat, fully loaded, locked and cocked.
Right.
And I laughed at her. I mean, I literally laughed. And she said, "What's so funny?" And I was like, "Oh, you're serious." And she was like, "Oh, we're very serious here in Jersey." I'm like, "Oh."
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Right. Yeah, so.
Right.
So I didn't ask the obvious question. Mm-hmm. I came up. I became a locksmith. That's my regular job. Mm-hmm. And you get into some hairy situations. You get into home evictions. You get into domestic violence. You get in some bad neighborhoods doing jobs. That stupid people, stupid time, stupid place kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, that's my job, to rescue stupid people with stupid times and stupid places.
Right.
So I would roll in, and of course, when I asked about getting a pistol purchase permit, those people are probably still laughing at me.
Right.
So I carried illegally for 2 years while I was up here. Mm. Pretty much, I looked at it this way. I'd made it through the Marine Corps. I made it through the Gulf War. Mm-hmm. I didn't go, by the way. But, you know, I was in during that time, and I didn't get deployed. Yeah. Didn't get a scratch on me.
Right.
I'm not going to die in Newark or Camden or Irvington unarmed.
Right. Gotcha.
And it's only a 4-year jail sentence. I'm like, I'm 23. I'll be out by 27. What's your point?
Yeah, right. Right.
So yeah. But as I spent more time here and got Jersey legal with their silly firearms ID card, it took 20 years to do that.
Wow.
It took that long to find some, you know, two people to co-sign onto as your witnesses or references. Mm-hmm. And I finally got my gun, you know, Ruger 1022. I decided I was going to become an NRA firearms instructor. My partner, Sean Fisher, who helps me with the diversity shoots, he owns Black Bag Resources. He became a firearms instructor and needed people to instruct. I got my 1022, I took it to the range, and I shot like I was blind. And it seems like I forgot all the fundamentals that I grew up learning and practiced the hell out of. So he, you know, we did an NRA basic rifle. And I went from shooting pizza box size groups to shooting a 10-round quarter size groups to 25 yards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was like, dude, this makes me feel so good, because to me, shooting is relaxing. It's like
therapeutic.
Yoga.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. And I was like, I really want to make people feel like I felt when I left the range. And also because I'm involved in people's safety. You know what I mean? I help people. I secure their homes. I secure their businesses. And I was like, and another thing that helps you protect yourself is a firearm. And I'd rather teach people firearm safety and how to use a firearm safely. So I went through and I got my, you know, NRA instructor for a basic pistol, rifle, and shotgun. NRA safety officer, RSO. Mm-hmm. And I was ready to launch my career as, you know, this just another firearms instructor. And then Sandy Hook happened.
Right.
And, of course, like every anti-gun state, the Jersey politicians were frothing at the mouth, couldn't wait to just start swinging a ban hammer. Mm-hmm. And it had nothing. I mean, that day, they had legislation pending.
Sure. Well, let's be honest. They had the legislation before in a drawer just waiting. But, yeah.
Uh-huh. But just no couth, man. No couth. That day. And it upset me. And that's when Sean and I got together and wrote our first letter to our legislator. Mm-hmm. We sat down at a table and took like 3 hours. Wow. To try to get the wording, to try to get our points across without being preachy. Mm-hmm. And I was new to social media at the time, so we took a photo of the letter. I think Sean might have typed it in, and we told people, use it. Cut and paste this. Yeah, he typed it in. He said, we said, cut and paste this letter and send it to your reps, no matter where you live. And that was our first bit of activism. And I went and testified in Trenton.
Nice.
And watched these people blow me off, and it angered me. Because by that time I'd been shooting for over a year, you know, in Jersey legally, you know, at ranges, meeting people, talking to people, and I've met people from every race, every religion, at the range, and we're having fun and we're sharing each other's guns. Mm-hmm. And then I go to testify, and it's wall to wall, pretty much the stereotypical middle-aged white male, beard, flannel, hat, mm-hmm. Don't tread on me, and it's 200 of them, with a couple of women sprinkled in, and maybe one or two persons with an accent. But for the most part, it was the stereotype. So I left there after testifying and went, where are all the blacks and the Hispanics and the women and the gays?
Yeah, so see them on the range. Where are they in the, you know?
Yeah, why aren't they here?
Why aren't they at the Capitol? Yeah.
So, you know, at that point, testifying and being like the only black guy there, I'd been to protests before, so I knew the heads of the New Jersey Second Amendment groups. And I called each of them up and I was like, hey, is there a program to encourage people of color to come and testify and be a part of the process? Because owning the gun doesn't make you an activist. Owning the gun makes you a beneficiary of the work done by activists.
Right.
So I was like, that needs to change. And all of them said no one had a program like that. No one had anything to encourage people of color. They just welcome everybody. They didn't specifically say anything.
Right.
Well, many people don't feel welcomed unless you specifically say, hey, you over there sitting in the with the blue sweater,
right,
come on over. So I talked to Anthony Calandro at Gun for Hire. That's where I got my training at for instructor. And I said, hey, Anthony, at Sean's encouragement, Sean told me, that why don't I start a group? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know how to start a group. He was like, you just started. Call Anthony at Gun for Hire. So I did. I said I'd like to invite some people over to Gun for Hire range if you'd allow me to use this classroom and talk about the Second Amendment and how they can be involved in the fight. Mm-hmm. Anthony didn't blink an eye and said, what about Thursday? So I was like, what do you mean, this Thursday? He said, yeah, 3 days, do
right.
that.
Right.
I was like, give me a week, man. So a week later, I had it all over Facebook, you know. I think I called, it was February 2015, I think I called it like the African American Diversity Shoot or something, you know, trying to get people to diversify. Well, people took it as I only wanted black people to show up, which was ridiculous.
Right.
But we had six people show up. Six people show up. One of them was a state trooper. I think it was the whole African American Day and firearms and black people thing.
Right.
So they sent someone. He was in civilian clothes. Yeah, he was in civilian clothes. Real nice guy. He showed up with his STI 1911s. And he couldn't tell me who invited him. Now, again, there were only six people. I only had, like, you know, 75 friends on Facebook.
Right.
Yeah, there was no, oh, who invited you? Like, how did you find out? He just he couldn't tell me. So I know we had piqued some official interest.
Right.
But what he saw, what we were doing, we were giving out paperwork to get your firearms ID card. We were informing people about Jersey laws and how it went and magazine limitations and what they could do. Mm-hmm. So that's how we started with that humble beginning. And I apologize to Anthony because, of course, at that time, I believe what people said on Facebook when they say they were coming to an event. So I was like, yeah, 24 people said they were coming.
Mm-hmm.
Six.
That's about right. That's not off base if you're familiar with how that works.
Yeah, not at all. So I was totally crushed. Not because I thought, you know, my idea is so great. It was because I figured part of it was Anthony totally reduced the price to like $10 for the night.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
$10 to participate, free rentals, free everything. And I was like, okay. hey, I'm sorry it didn't work out. I guess this thing kind of sucked. Anthony was like, no, just keep doing it. Consistency. So we've been doing that for Thursdays every other month for 4 years now. And it went from, again, six people to the first one to earlier last year, at the beginning of last year, we had so many people come that it actually was a fire hazard. So I had to start selling tickets and limiting to 40 people coming to the event.
That's great.
Yeah, we overflowed. We overflowed the parking lot, and he has a 50-yard range and a 25-yard range. We were packed in both of them. It was just way too much. So yeah, now we sell tickets. It's $40. Excuse me, $20. And we have pizza and prizes, and we bring in Second Amendment groups like the NRA, ILA, and local New Jersey groups like CNJFO, which is working on carry permits in the state of New Jersey, getting carry permits in the state of New Jersey for everyone, and ANJRPC, which is New Jersey's NRA chapter. So we introduce people to these groups, and then the groups can talk to individuals. We bring in firearms instructors for each port, so people were safe, and they get introduced to guns in every port. You come in, you start at one end, you shoot your way to the other. So it's a fun event for people of all races. We give the safety brief. And because we've been doing this work, we've been getting sponsorships from companies like Henry, companies like High Point. SIG hopefully starts sending us some stuff. SDI, Sonoran Desert Institute, you know, the gunsmithing school, they sent me a bunch of things. Crossview just helped out tremendously. So it's just continue to grow. I mean, there's lots of names and lots of companies that have helped us over the years, including Springfield Armory before they lost their minds and decided to stab gun owners in the back.
Right. Got a little greedy. They got a little greedy.
Yeah, dude, I was like, wow, that's really messed up. And people were like, they're not really pro-2A. And I'm like, no, they were so pro-2A. They sent me a box you could fit a person in the very first time I contacted them and asked them for stuff.
Right.
And it had thousands of dollars of swag in it.
Right. And they still give out and support a lot of different things. I mean, even during that whole, the whole, you know, legislative, whatever, pay-to-play almost mess they were, you know, involved in.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that kind of caught me. I'm going, a lot of people that live in free states don't understand what it's like to live behind enemy lines. It's like, oh, you support Democratic politicians that are stealing our rights. And you go, you know, that was all that was running, right? There were no Republicans.
Right.
There was no red. So you have to try to stay in business. And you got to do what you got to do. But what Springfield did was, it was beyond the pale. They tried to cut other businesses out, and that was not cool. And maybe their stock price is paid for it. It's not up to me to punish Springfield Armory. You know, I know what they did for me. But it's been a wild ride. We have donations on like GoFundMe and things like that. We sell t-shirts, like my current one that I'm wearing now is my 2A4E diversity t-shirt, and it says gun control equals racism across the front. And this is my rally shirt. Don't even get paid for this.
That's for those, because obviously we don't have the cameras. That's the blue shirt, right?
Yep, that's the royal blue shirt.
Well, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for that stupid blue shirt, and here's why. Had a guy contact me the other day. He's like, I need a cap. I'm like, okay, cool, website. Go, you know, get after it. He's like, no. I want one that matches the color on Tony's 2A4E shirt. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You realize I got to order like 12 caps at a time here, and I sell literally one every quarter or something. You're wanting me to go out and buy 12 caps in Tony Blue, and that's exactly what I told him, in Tony Blue. You know, so you can buy one. I'm like, why don't you just take my design, you know, take my logo and go have one, you know, go have it made if that's, you know, what you want. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you for that blue shirt, because I'm apparently going to have to change the color of my caps now to make
That's funny. I didn't even pick this blue. We all got together because, of course, now I'm friends with a lot of the members of these groups and people that run the organizations. And we were like, we're going to do a protest in Jersey. We need to all pick a color for our protest. And CNJFO came out with their 2A shirts. And I did this same color. And the reason I wanted gun control equals racism is because when cameras are at a protest, they pull back. You know what I mean? And you want to see a sea of blue, but you also want to start a conversation. Mm-hmm. And almost everybody that reads it goes, how does that work? How does gun control equals racism if right. they don't know?
Right.
And now you're talking about something. Now you can talk about the racist history of gun control in America and how it was used to control all people. I mean, yes, generally the very first time was rules against blacks. Mm-hmm. In 1620, the first law in the colony of Virginia to do with firearms was making it illegal for blacks to own guns. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and then pretty much they disarmed anyone that they deemed a danger or they didn't like. And you can run through every race, you know, in America as you were running, everybody who was victimized by America. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's only used to control people regardless of what color you are. And now they're doing it on all of us. Don't buy into the okey-doke. It's a 400-year-old racist strategy that right. now is being used against everyone.
Right. No, agreed. Now that first diversity sheet you talk about that was mostly, or all, rather not mostly, it was all... black as far as the demographic. What's the mm-hmm. what's the average demographics look like nowadays?
I mean I can't even put a number on it, mainly because it's that diverse. It's large Hispanic.
Awesome. That was the point. Yeah, awesome.
Large Hispanic population. Depends on, you know, which diversity shoot. They could be a third of the people are African American. We have a bunch of the old white men who are giving of their time and money and ammo. They come out and they bring their friends. So it's really a mixed bag. Good friend Nashim, a young Muslim guy who was going to school to be a lawyer, real into Second Amendment advocacy. That's right. as a young, you know, young guy. Uh-huh. But he couldn't convince his friend. It was on Thursdays. He couldn't get off for class. So for 4 years or however many years, he was telling me, I want to come to your diversity shoots. I want to bring my friends. They finally graduated. He showed up with like 6 friends of his.
Nice.
Girl was in a hijab. Dudes had the full beard. And they mixed pretty well. There were some mistakes made, you know, when someone was trying to teach the young lady how to shoot. He touched her. You're not supposed to do that with, you know, a Muslim woman if she's not in your family or you're not in a relationship with them. Nothing happened then. Nobody said anything, but Nashim shot me an email, and I was like, look, mistakes are going to be made, but we have to meet each other at 60%. Mm-hmm. We have to step outside our comfort zones and understand that sometimes, you know, you make a faux pas, and it's just based on ignorance. Mm-hmm. Right. It's not... Yeah, anything mean about it? There's no heat on it. You just, you know, if you don't know the culture, you don't know the culture.
Right. Right.
And again, nothing happened, but it was a learning lesson, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It made me more aware, because I knew that, but I assumed I was the slowest dude in the room, and everybody else already knew it.
Right.
But that's how I go through life, thinking I'm the dumbest guy in the room.
Right, yeah. Low expectation, so, man. That's what that, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, the thing is working out really well. A lot of people have supported us, and I'm really proud of that. We're trying to grow. This year, I'm finally going to do the 501c3, only because every year I try to do it, something would come up, and we'd spend the money that it takes. Mm-hmm. So this year, some friends said they were going to get together and help us pay all the fees, so I didn't have to worry about making that money. And because every other month we have these and we do raffles and things like that and a little ticket sales, but I split the money with the venue. Mm-hmm. And then you have bills till the next month that you have to pay and buy ammo and do other things with and run the website. So it was always not enough money coming in.
Right.
So if they can take care of it or even reimburse us, that'll help out a lot, because that'll get that. And we can go to people for... what do you call it when you go to friends or NRA and ask for money? Scum.
Yeah, you
grants.
Have grants. That was it. Yeah, the grants. Yeah.
Grants, because if I could figure out at least how to take care of traveling back and forth to these shows, which I use my tax return money for, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? It's like I'd really like to be able to at least pay for that with the project.
Right.
And then my wife and I can actually use our tax return money to buy a better car or go on vacation or something.
Pay bills, buy groceries. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's like I'm hustling, working overtime for comp time, so I have time to take off to do the things for the diversity shoot. I'm not whining about it. It's just, you know, it's not as easy as people go, well, you go to cool places and they give you free stuff.
Yeah. If only it really worked like that.
Yeah. I'm like, the first time Henry gave us rifles, it was like a 3-year relationship, multiple shows. And somebody said, you got 3 free rifles. And I'm like, with the money I spent in the hotel stay alone for NRA, I could have purchased those 3 rifles.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I'm like, it's not about that. It's about building relationships with companies so I can give stuff away and introduce people to all these firearms and firearms companies.
Right.
Because a lot of them get their hands on that first 10/22. Guess what the first gun they're going to purchase is?
Yep.
10/22.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I
So it's
I
like...
Agree. It's a great opportunity for those in the industry that are out there that are looking for that sort of thing, you know, that are looking for more grassroots level, I guess, marketing and advertising. I mean, that's word of mouth, you know. It's the best is the best possible marketing and advertising that you can possibly have. It works slow. It's very slow working. It's definitely not the fastest. It's not like going viral on YouTube or Facebook or something like that. But it's also the longest lasting form of marketing.
So. And also with social media, that stuff has spread up significantly from in the old days when you'd only, you know, talk about it and show people that you could physically see in front of you. Mm-hmm. Now it's on social media and your cousin in Des Moines is saying, hey, I saw you shooting that gun. How much is it? Where'd you get it from? Who makes it?
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden, they went from Jersey to Des Moines.
Right.
And that's 2 guns sold.
Yep.
So it's like, yeah, it works. I mean, we're slow. And now I'm gonna concentrate on working in Jersey and New York and Maryland. That's where I'm going to work this year, and hopefully I can slide into PA before it's all over with. But what I'm going to do is work behind enemy lines and take guns that are legal in those states, but also inform people, you know, you're neutered, right? Like, you're here. You can't have an adjustable stock. You can't have this. I can't bring a pistol into New York to a diversity shoot or a handgun at all.
Right.
Because I don't have, you know, permission. But I'm going to bring some Henry Lever actions with me.
Mm-hmm.
And let some people shoot those. I still think the High Point carbine is legal there. Some people, you know, poo-poo a High Point carbine, but when I put it in this new high tower chassis that looks like a bullpup rifle from Halo, when they see that, they're going to shut up, just like all the High Point haters shut up when a 10mm came out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You heard them stop hating. And they fell off social media for a while because all of them were buying 10mm High Points somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Shut them up for a little bit. So I assumed incorrectly, I guess. And I do want to shift into the podcast just for a minute here. While we still have a little bit of time left, but so I always assumed that the podcast came first and then the diversity shoot. So what I'm hearing is it's the opposite way around. Correct.
We just started the podcast 61 weeks ago. We started it a little over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And just because we wanted to talk to people about different things that we wouldn't get a chance to talk to. You know, at the diversity shoot, you go with the flow. You put out the information, and when people start asking questions, that's the direction the event goes.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about on our podcast, I break it down to, you know, what have we been doing, legislation that's coming up in any state. We name them all. We even do call to actions. What else? Gear. We talk about gear. We talk about training concepts. And we talk about gun culture. And then we close out with shout outs to someone in the industry. So if you've never shot a gun before, hopefully we can introduce you some different aspects, you know, the different aspects of firearms community.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you do have a bunch of guns, we talk about a bunch of guns, gear, and even thought process that goes into what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like our last, what was it? episode 61 was about celebrity firearms trainers. I took a Chris Costa class, Costa Ludus, carbine class. And I talked about my impressions of, you know, a celebrity firearms trainer. You see the guy. That's the dude from the Magpul videos. What's getting trained by him or with him like? So we talk about that. And tomorrow's podcast that we'll release Sunday, I totally forgot because I did it at midnight last night, and I've only had 4 hours sleep since. I can't tell you what our podcast is going to be. Right. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. It's going to be about this High Point carbine and also one thing. Also, how to de-escalate and the things you learn actually taking defensive firearms classes beyond shooting a gun.
Right. And that's a, and that's an important thing because there's, you got to realize there's all types of training that's available out there. And I think people get way too hung up. I know I was this way at one time. I was this way. Now I still don't. I'm still not a huge proponent of the big trainers and all of this organized training and stuff like that. I believe with the resources we have with technology and things at our fingertips and other things, I think that we can certainly train on our own for real life scenarios just about as well as, you know, spending a bunch of money and making trips and going and visiting trainers. That said, I did have this misconception, and I'm not afraid to admit it, that I viewed training, the defensive training and stuff anyway, I viewed it as that was the majority of training that was going on out there, and then it was a lot of sliding across the hood of a car and falling on the ground and shooting underneath the car and through the door jams and, you know, a bunch of craziness like that, like it was a John Wick movie or something.
Yep.
And it's not. There's all types of training that's out there, from that type of stuff, if that's what you want to do and you want to go get that type of training, to just very basic, you know, very basic stuff where it's almost static and you're working on, you're just working on draw and sight alignment, you know, just very, very basic things.
Yep. And that's what we teach, Sean and I. We get together and we teach people, one, firearm safety, you know, those NRA first step classes. We got away from them because what NRA did with their learning module that you had to take, you know, the customers had to take it online. And then they just came to us for the shooting part, and none of us felt comfortable with that because I don't know if you had your kids do the online safety part.
Right.
And I'm not giving you a gun and having you walk around a range without you going through my safety class.
Right.
But we do that, and then we do the step in how to use your firearm seriously. Not just how to use it safely, but how to use it seriously. And then if you want to learn how to draw, we take that. We have like three levels of classes you can go through to with us, rifle, pistol, and shotgun. So that's what we did, but I saw celebrity training the same as you did. A bunch of people playing dress up, sliding around and jumping out, doing stuff you know you'd never do. Like you ride around in your Prius with your rifle on the seat. But what I did find out doing the celebrity training is it isn't like that. But the celebrity dude is there because he's an expert in his field usually, just on another level that you probably won't as a civilian get that training. Like Chris Costa was, you know, Coast Guard, worked with a lot of special forces guys, did a lot of door kicking stuff. So yeah, you get to hear stories from this guy and he shows you techniques that they use that probably is mostly not applicable to you in civilian firearms use, but the things you learn can be applied to your own self-defense scenario. You know what I mean? And he tweaks it, and nothing he told you is wrong. Nothing he told you is dangerous. It's just the fundamentals being carried out, you know, more efficiently and smoothly by somebody that's been there and done that. So I look at it as not a bad thing, but not necessary, just like you say.
Right. Yeah, it's an extension of that knowledge, I guess.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is, and it's fun, and you get to meet a lot of like-minded people. But, yes, I'm a big dude. I mean, actually, I'm the largest pound-for-pound firearms instructor in America. That's my hashtag. But I don't have all this Cry Precision clothing. You know what I mean? There's nothing at 5'11", they have at 5'11", that fits me unless they start selling cologne. So when I walked in, I had my work boots on. Pair of jeans, pair of knee pads I picked up at Lowe's because they said we're going to be, you know, dropping to your knees and doing groundwork. My High Point hat because they got that new cool logo. Mm-hmm. And a t-shirt from my favorite Second Amendment group. That's how I came. A lot of the dudes looked like they were about to be deployed to Afghanistan.
Right.
They had all the gear. They had all the camo. They had the cool guns and stuff. And I was like, all right, well, let's get busy.
Right.
And it's not that. And, of course, I've been to enough classes, and I know I shoot well enough that I'm not going to be intimidated by anyone. So, yeah, let's talk and let's have fun. Because usually the first few minutes of any class or the first hour or so is everybody walking around trying to strut their tail feathers. And that was gotten over pretty quickly because a lot of these guys are taking classes together and that ice was broken.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, yeah, it was fun. But, you know, everyday people sometimes get intimidated by going to a class. I don't want to look bad in front of people. Look, man, I don't know these people. Mm-hmm. Right. I figured I had the worst day at the range of my life and all the bullets fell out of my gun and the gun fell apart. I don't know these people. They'll just talk about the fat guy whose gun fell apart. They won't know my
right.
name.
Right. No, agreed.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
And go in to learn.
And that's why, too, I think that I think your local, you know, wherever you live, I mean, looking up some of your local instructors and stuff is so important, right? Because unlike these boutique training courses, you know, and the Hollywood whatever training courses like you're talking about, those smaller ones are just it's a lot more comfortable course, a lot more comfortable class a lot of times. So start out if you're looking to get that training, start out with those small, you know, like you said, the first diversity shoot like you guys had with six people there. You know, look for those classes that's just four, five, six people from your community, from your neighborhood, people like, you know, just like you, you know, and then move up the ladder into the, you know, classes with 40, 50 people that, you know, from all across the country.
Yeah, do you build your fundamentals. And you can do that locally. And also, while you're doing that, you're going to be building relationships. That dude you shot next to, you know, ends up, y'all went to high school together. Or you have people in common, you know, and now y'all going to the shooting range. You didn't even have that relationship before. Now you're shooting more. You're practicing the things you learned, and you're getting better with the fundamentals and more confident with your gun. You don't have to go to a door-kicking, shoulder-rolling rappel off the roof class ever.
Right. I would love to see you rappel off a roof. I would pay money for that.
Oh, I did. I did, but hey, that was the late 80s, man. That's
I'm talking about now. I think that's the next fundraiser, you know. You could raise thousands on that.
You know how many children would be traumatized because they realize, I didn't know Santa Claus was a fat black man.
I was thinking more like the Kool-Aid man, but nice. Santa Claus works too. Well, Tony, we're up against the hour, it looks like. But before we split, I know you got websites and emails and contact information, and I darn sure want you to get that stuff out there. So if you would, give us that spiel.
All right, here's the rundown. If you want to contact me personally, just go to tony@diversityshoot.com. You want to check out my website, which has links to not only the podcast, but also how you can donate to GoFundMe, diversityshoot.com. If you want to follow me on Instagram, as Simon Says Train. If you want to follow us on Facebook, is The Second Is For Everyone on Facebook. You can buy our t-shirts at 1022clothing.us. It's like 5'11", but for big dudes, so it's 1022clothing.us. Stop by, buy my promotion t-shirts. I get a little bit on that. Buy my blue shirts, the Tony Blue t-shirt. I don't get any of that. That's sold at cost, just so you and your friends can show up at rallies with the same shirts without breaking the bank.
Nice.
You want to follow our podcast, you can do so. We're on most podcast apps. And if you want to donate to our podcast, you can go to Patreon and become a patron and get in on giveaways that we give to our friends to help us out. So the 2A4E podcast is how you find us on Patreon. I think that's it, man. That's the whole list. I used to feel bad about it, but that's how people can actually help me. People always ask, how can I help you out? Mm-hmm. There you go.
Well, and if you don't put it out there, nobody can help you, right? There may be people out there, I say it all the time, that, in fact, just last night we had a conversation about Patreon, and there was somebody in the chat that's like, well, I'm waiting until I get 500 subs and my quality and my content's better, and I'm like, dude, just do it. Just put it out there. Get it going, because you may only have 10 subs or something, but somebody sees something worthwhile in your project and wants to support you. Have something out there available. It's not about, hey, let's beg for some money. It's about having something out there where people want to support you. They can.
Exactly. Yeah. Maj Torre from Black Guns Matter, friend of mine, called me up on the phone. He was like, Tony, you got to get a Patreon. I'm like, yeah, but same excuses. I don't know. He was like, dude, get it. People see what you're doing. They want to help you out. They'll send money to you every month, and it's not going to break their bank, and it's going to help you out by guaranteeing you an income stream so you can plan things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what we did.
Right, yeah.
And, I mean, I'm not uber successful or anything, but it allows me to, like, pay the bills.
Right.
And do things like that. So I really appreciate everybody that does. And with corporate sponsors, you can get free stuff if you help us out. And I thought that was awesome because I approached, you know, different companies and told them what I was going to do, and they were like, okay, here.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, get that little extra thank you, you know, for helping out with the projects.
Yep.
Well, Tony, it's been great. Have you got anything else before we get out of here?
No, that was everything. I can't wait to get our patches in, though. I mean, I don't know if you talked about... Yeah, I'm sure you've talked about it on the show.
I have. And actually, I talked with... recorded an interview with Aaron Paulette earlier.
Nice.
And was talking with her about the worth putting it out there, because you and I talk on there all the time, with the 2A workshops. And was talking to her. She seemed pretty interested in the 2A workshops. Kind of telling her about the patch batch and how, you know, through the 2A workshops, we had all of these people come together and make that happen. I think we're getting closer. It ended up being a lot more drawn out, time involved process when making some of these patches, I think, than was initially thought. But we're going to get there. We're going to get them all out before it's over with.
Yeah, can't wait. Plus, I bought an entire set. I think one or two sets.
Oh, I did the same. I certainly wanted my own set. So, there was some cool patches in there. I mean, yours, I guess that's the first patch you guys will have done, correct?
Yep, that would be our first patch.
So, awesome. So, I mean, that's collectible class right there. and mine was a special patch. It was specially designed. And, you know, there's a few other patches in that you probably will never see again. So, if you didn't jump into that deal, you more than likely, you missed out. But, we're going to get out of here, Tony. Again, thank you for joining us. And we'll definitely talk again in the future, probably in the next few days, if I was guessing.
Pretty much, yeah. I think 18th is the next one, right?
Yeah, I believe so. So, yep. Have a good one, Tony. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.